Michael Smith, it is episode 39 of the Canes Cast, and you know the Bon Jovi concert is going to be at PNC Arena this week, so you know what that means.
What's that?
This podcast is living on a prayer.
So wow, bad. You worked it in there.
So bad. So bad.
You gave me a heads up. I wasn't sure where it was going to go. It went there.
Oh, it did.
It went there.
I was gonna make a Young Guns reference. I was going to go with, we've seen a million faces and we've rocked them all.
Yeah.
I'm not a big Bon Jovi fan, but I know the lyrics too.
Sure.
It's one of those things where I was around it enough and you absorb it. Like, I don't know if you had this band. I had two older sisters growing up. I still have them. They're still here. Mom, and my dad worked second shift, so I know every lyric to every Barry Manilow song ever. I don't enjoy the music, I just know it,
right?
Because I heard it constantly, because growing up in the age before headphones, or at least, you know, affordable good headphones that people would listen to music to. So yes, and that's kind of how I am, because I had a buddy who drove me to school every day, and we listened to Rush, we listened to Boston, and we listened to Bon Jovi. Know it all.
Rush? Very good song selection. Boston, decent. Bon Jovi.
Sure.
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 Yeah.
I mean, hey, if you're from that area, I get that you like it.
You know.
All right,
He had a time.
Yeah. Oh, he did. So, he truly did.
And now he's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, so he must be doing something right.
They defined a genre of music from the mid-1980s to, I'd say, the almost mid-1990s.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Seems about right.
Good with that. Yeah. I have no issue. It's one of those things. Like, if you like it, cool.
If you like it,
you take it. Do not send it back to me. You take it and enjoy it. So,
if you like it, you can take it. If you don't, send it right back.
All right, we've got the music part out of the way. And now you're going to hear the roadies building the stage. We think there'll be some background noise here on episode 39. Good Charlotte. Ooh, another music reference
wow.
for you. You like that one?
Yeah.
I did what I can.
It never caught on for me. Right.
Well, we'll explain why it's Good Charlotte, because Michael Smith was in Charlotte as the Checkers had their playoff run. And, man, you found out playoff hockey is always fun.
Playoff hockey is a blast. And at any level, it steps up. It kicks up a notch, no matter what level you're at. If you're in the NHL or AHL or, you know, I assume even the ECHL or the SPHL, playoff hockey takes on a new level just because – games mean that much more. You're yep. a game closer to elimination each game you play. So more and more is on the line. And it was a fun weekend in Charlotte.
All right. Well, let's get down to the nitty gritty here for the Carolina Hurricanes. A franchise that's looking for a general manager is now looking for a head coach. Is Bill Peters last week resigned his position as the head coach of the Carolina Hurricanes. And by the time you hear this podcast, depending on when it gets put up and when you get the news, he'll be the head coach of the Calgary Flames. Makes sense. He's a Three Hills, Alberta native. They like him. He's got a very good history with Brad Treliving, who is the general manager right now of the Calgary Flames. So we wish nothing but the best for Bill Peters. And he even said it in his statement, which is, thanks to the organization, everyone who gave him the opportunity here, but probably best for him to move on.
Yeah, and he'll be in a familiar region, not too far from Three Hills. He's got some history in the area, coaching in the WHL for the Spokane Chiefs. The Calgary Hitmen, actually, of the WHL play in the same building, the Saddle Dome, as the Flames. So he's got some regional, obviously regional connections there, being not too far from Calgary. So I think it'll be a good fit for him. It makes sense that it wasn't going to take him that long to get back in the coaching game in the NHL.
You don't resign a job when right. you have money left on your contract unless you are 100% certain that you're going to get a job someplace else that's more attractive to you. And that's
yeah.
it was one of those things where it was kind of like a worst kept secret. People knew that this was a possibility, and then as soon as the Calgary job came open, it just became a matter of time for Bill Peters.
Yeah, exactly. And that only leaves a couple of jobs open right now, Dallas, New York, and obviously the Hurricanes for now. And I think maybe we'll get some more clarity on that in the next few weeks where the Hurricanes decide to go. You know, as you mentioned, too, also a general manager spot open with the Hurricanes. So some uncertainty ahead. But I think, you know, we've kind of talked about that and touched on that heading into this offseason, that there would be question marks. But I think the Hurricanes are, you know, diligent in their search for both a new general manager and now since Friday, a new head coach.
Yeah. And there are lots of places where the Hurricanes can go for a new head coach. Anything that we say would just be pure speculation. But I'm anxious to see who takes over and what their roster is going to look like, as I'm sure they are. But there are a lot of ways for Tom Dundon and the front office to go right now for a new head coach, and we'll just wait and see. But again, right now for us, it's too early to speculate because we could throw out names, and a lot of names have already been put out there.
Yeah.
I'll address one that has been out there. If it is Rod Brindamore, because that's a name where, you know, he has talked to the local media here and said that if they're looking for a coach, he hopes that Tom Dundon makes the call to him for why it should be. I think that Rod Brindamore as a head coach could bring something to the team, the room that's needed, that spark, that when to say something, that when to move it. And plus there's that built-in respect factor that the players already have for him. So there's not going to be a lot of, we got to learn this guy, this guy's got to learn us. He comes in with a knowledge, and, you know, sometimes it's not always the situation you look at, but it's not that the Canes let Bill Peters go and you're thinking there's this intrinsic problem with the coaching staff. Bill Peters just left for another job, and if you kind of like the direction this team was going, if you're Tom Dundon, I think he liked it when he first got here. Well, let's see what it can do with something different. And he heard from the players, so I'm sure they'll have an input on who's got an opportunity to be the next head coach for this team.
Yeah, and if there's one guy who's going to motivate that group of 20 in the locker room, it's going to be Rod Brindamore. That's a voice that is going to be well-respected. That's a voice who has been there, not only in the NHL, but yeah, with this franchise. So you want to think, if you think of a guy who is going to motivate his group, without a doubt, I think Rod Brindamore could get the job done. And, you know, he might not be as well-rounded on the X's and O's because he doesn't have head coaching experience.
Yep.
But I think, you know, his years under Bill Peters, even his years with Kirk Muller, his years just in the organization, I think, would serve him well if that's the direction the Canes choose to go. But I think, you know, above all, it's that motivational factor, and that's a guy who's going to get the most out of his guys, no question about it.
Yeah, and you can bring in guys who are X and O guys, Michael.
Sure.
That's one of the things where, you know, the far fact of coaching today, there's a lot less, as in my mind, for watching head coaches now be these, you know, autocratic generals that this is how it is and we're going to do things. Those things are kind of going the way of the dinosaur. You kind of almost have to go in a different direction when you're talking about a head coach now. Head coach now is more Phil Jackson, Zen philosopher. You got to be dad. You got to be psychologist. You got to be a psychiatrist, anything else that's got anything with psych in it. Maybe a big fan of the TV show Psych. I'm not sure. But it's really now head coaching is more managing personalities. And if you take a look at the coaching part of it, the coaching aspect of it, your assistants, surround yourself with good assistants and you can win. And there are a lot of guys who do that. We can point to other sports, but like the National Football League, you look at Bill Belichick, yes, defense, he knows everything his offense is going to do, but he really just kind of handles the defense and the offense. All right, you go do their thing. Take a look at baseball. How many guys got managerial jobs this year? High profile managerial jobs with zero experience as being a manager. You know, Alex Cora is what? He's the manager of the Red Sox. They got off to a good start. Aaron Boone was handed the keys to the Yankees. So I understand there's like a lot of concern, but you kind of got to stop thinking in the, well, this is how it's always been done phase a lot. And you can bring in, maybe if you want to, you bring in a guy who was a former head coach to run the forwards and be the X and O guy. I look at Tampa, like John Cooper had head coaching experience, but not NHL playing experience. John Cooper, a lot of people will tell you, great motivator for that team, knows what buttons to push for the Lightning, and he does. But he's got great assistance in Tampa, and that makes the difference. So, you know, it. I think to me, your head coach now has to be a guy who the players want to play hard for every single night that they play. So we'll see. And I'll tell you, I think that Rod Brindamore would be a hell of a good choice.
Yeah.
There's a lot that I can point to, and you and I can just from our time, you know, with the behind the scenes with what we do. But we see an awful lot of him working late with players. Players have that respect for him. How many times is he the one who skated an extra and he's skating with them? You know, he's not
and
just sitting there
up,
putting him through. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. So that's just it. But the Canes can go in a lot of directions.
Oh, yeah. A lot of directions. And they could even bring in a general manager who has an opinion about what direction he wants to go. And there are a bunch of different variables and scenarios and options. And it's all going to play out in the next few weeks. I think ideally you get the situation figured out sooner rather than later, just because you have some tentpole events coming up in the summer. Obviously, the draft in late June, followed by prospects development camp shortly after that. You want to sort of have your ducks in a row, so to speak, before you get into all the nitty-gritty of that. So I think the team is probably going to take care of it sooner rather than later, and we'll start to have some clarity on this whole situation.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's where we are right now. And again, as the general manager search goes, I do think that there is part of the Tom Dundon and what he's doing with the front office. They're going to wait for the playoffs to be over, because I'm sure that there are guys who they have identified whose teams are in the postseason who they really want to talk to and get a better sit down with. So that's where we are for these points for the Carolina Hurricanes. And we're also going to come up here on the show. Michael Smith and I are going to look at the defensemen and how that worked out. And before we go there, we called this episode 39 of the Canescast with the Web's Michael Smith, who was very comfortable in Charlotte.
Yes.
Saw you wearing the shorts there. Good for you.
Yeah, that's true.
In the American. I guess in the American you're allowed to wear the shorts.
In the A. It's fine. Well, it was
phrasing.
Kind of warm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Free. That's true.
Yeah. Just putting that. Yeah. Hey, moving on.
Yep,
it's part of our thing. But the Charlotte Checkers got two playoff wins.
They did.
And where do we want to go? Do we want to go the fact that they're up 2-0 in their series right now? Against a really good minor league organization that people think is loaded and has a good opportunity to win another Calder Trophy, or a Calder Cup, I should say.
Yeah,
that's what it is.
Calder
Trophy is for the Rookie of the Year in the National Hockey League. But I look at what the Charlotte Checkers did. Let's go to the celebration. Valentin Zhiekhov. Love it. Love playoff hockey. Love everything about it.
And that's a guy, Valentin Zhiekhov, who doesn't normally celebrate. He doesn't. He barely smiles when he scores. And when he scored the goal on Friday, he shot his arms in the air right in the face of a Wilkes-Barre defender who, of course, understandably took exception to that, and a little chaos ensued from that. But, you know, what I liked from that game, from game one, was that Wilkes-Barre, and the Checkers knew this was going to happen. Wilkes-Barre tried to come out and set this physical tone. And not only did the Checkers match it and arguably exceed it in some ways, but they also set their own tone. They set their tone of, look, we've got this much skill, we play fast, and we're going to beat you at our game. And that's exactly what the Checkers were able to do, both in games one and two. They both matched the physicality and set the tone that they wanted to, which was, we're going to beat you with skill and speed. It's a really good team down there. I haven't seen, really, aside from highlights, much of the Checkers this season, just because our obligations here are pretty much around the clock. But that's a really talented team. Mike Vellucci has done an excellent job behind the bench, getting the most out of his group there. It's really talented. And it's the first round series, best of five series, is an interesting beast because it's a 2-3 split. So as the lower seed, the Checkers played the first two games at home. Now they'll go to Wilkes-Barre for at least one, if not two or three games, depending on what happens in game three on Thursday. But the pressure is almost on the Checkers at the start to win both of the games and then put the pressure on Wilkes-Barre heading back on the road. Because you look at last year against Chicago, Charlotte split the first two games. They won game one, lost game two. That almost then puts the pressure on Charlotte to go up to Chicago and win two out of three. And that's tough. That's not easy to do. So now Charlotte, winners of two in a row, they just have to get one win in the next three games up in Wilkes-Barre to advance. So I think they've put themselves in a good position. It was a real good competitive two games. It's a talented team. It's a team that gets scoring from both their forwards and the defense. Game two, it was defenders who scored all of the goals except one of the empty netters Clark Bishop put in. Hayden Fleury scored a couple, and of course he smiled about it after not scoring a goal in 67 games here in his rookie season in Raleigh. But it's a fun team to watch and an exciting team to watch. Keep an eye on what happens this weekend in Wilkes-Barre. Game three is Thursday night, and if necessary, games four and five will follow on Saturday and Sunday, respectively. But it's a fun team. If you haven't been to Charlotte, get down to Bojangles Coliseum and see a game. They do a great job with the game presentation there. It's a nice, intimate setting, and it gets loud. There was a really good crowd there both Friday and Saturday, but especially Saturday. They got really loud and got behind the Checkers. So good to see them start off. The future is very bright for this organization. There's some good prospects down in Charlotte, and they've got a really good team led by Mike Vellucci. And they're a win away from moving on to the second round.
And you know why this is a very important series, and I think a very important playoff for this Charlotte Checker organization, Michael? Because it builds a culture of winning.
Yeah.
It really does. And you take a look, there have been some teams where they put a core together. They win down in the minors, and then when they come up to the NHL, they have that feeling of – and it's – I know it's a different animal, but they have the feeling of what it takes to win. And that's one of the things that when people talk about the Carolina Hurricanes, that's missing at times. You know, they don't know how to win these games. They don't know how to close this out. They don't know how to put a winning streak together. So if this team goes down and takes out Scranton Wilkes-Barre, or is it Wilkes-Barre Scranton? Depends on where you are. Yeah, it's
the dash in there and the backslash or forward slash. I can never remember.
Whatever.
Which is which.
I mean, because for my entire life it was always Scranton Wilkes-Barre, and then all of a sudden a few years ago they're like, "Well, it's Wilkes-Barre Scranton." Fine. Good.
Kind of sounded like Chuck Caton.
Proud noise only.
Vis-a-vis. Thank you very much, Michael.
You mentioned, you know, games one and two and the culture of winning. Something interesting to note, and, you know, again, I haven't seen much of the Checkers this season, but the Checkers were down 2-0 heading into the third period of game one. But it never felt like they were panicked. It never felt like to me that there was this sense of dread that they wouldn't be able to still come back and win the game. And then they got the first goal, and then they got the second goal, and then, of course, they won it in overtime, and you could just sense that momentum building. Then in game two, they get scored on in the first shift of the game. That could have been backbreaking, but they settled right in. Kind of a slow start. Took them about 5-10 minutes to get going, but they settled right in. Alex Nedeljkovic, from then on, saved everything he saw, and they came back and they won the game late in the third period. So I think there is a good culture building there where this team is at a point where it feels like it's never out of a game. You know, down 2-0, down 1-0 early. As they were chasing the game really for most of the weekend. They had a lead for really the last 5 minutes of game two there. But it never felt like they were out of it. And I think that's a credit to the guys there and the team that Vellucci has been building all season long. So I'm going to be interested to see how far they can take this thing. But they're going to need one on the road. And it's not going to be easy because Wilkes-Barre Scranton headed back home is going to play a strong game at home. And they've got a good team, a good veteran skilled team led by Tom Kostopoulos, a name you might remember, former Hurricane. He's the captain. He's hanging him up at the end of the season. So they're going to push back pretty hard, and I'll be interested to see how the Checkers handle that pushback.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting, but I like to hear what you just said, where they never felt they were out of it. They believed they were going to win it, and that's what you have to have, especially at that level, the pro levels, that, you know, we're not out of it. There's no, they scored on us. You brush it off and move on to the next shift, and you try to get it back. So we'll see if that culture builds and what kind of impact that will have on the NHL club in the not-too-distant future, probably as soon as next year for this Canes team.
Yeah, I mean, I don't doubt that, you know, we're going to see some of those faces down in Charlotte, Valentin Zhikov, Warren Fogle, Roland McEwen,
I liked
Hayden Fleury.
It was a super small sample size of Nick Waugh, but...
Yeah, Nick Waugh. All of these guys are going to come back next year with a little bit more confidence, just knowing that they've done it at this level, whether it was a game for Nick Waugh, I think 10 games for Roland McEwen, a couple games for Warren Fogle. They've been here. They kind of know what to expect. They're going to be a little more comfortable, and they're going to be more confident just based on the seasons they've had in Charlotte and just getting that experience under their belt here. So big things ahead, I think, for this organization. There's some real talent down in Charlotte.
All right. Well, that's great to hear, and great job by you. And we'll give a shout-out to Zach McCluzek from Canes Vision. Went down and did a lot of film that's now on the web that you can see at CarolinaHurricanes.com.
Yeah, and a big thanks to all our friends down in Charlotte. The Checkers, a great organization there. They do a fantastic job there at Bojangles. Very kind hosts. And Paul Branicki had so much fun that he left before game two.
I was going to give Paul Branicki so much credit because he got me the picture of the playoffs. And that's you interviewing Mike Vellucci.
Yeah, yeah. While wearing
in shorts.
Yeah,
exactly. In the American.
Yeah, it was fine. That's good.
Fine. That's fine.
I like to be comfortable, and we had driven, you know, made the drive from Raleigh to Charlotte, and I wanted to be comfortable.
I'm not judging. I'm just pointing out.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's more of an observation than it is a judgment.
That's fair.
That's it. That's all. You're the one who's a little defensive on this right now. You look good. You asked good questions. The answers were great. Clearly, it did not bother Mike Vellucci that you were wearing shorts.
He's a good interview.
He's a pro.
Yeah.
And a good beard, which, by the way, I don't know.
Really good.
I don't know.
He really nice and cleaned up.
Well, I'm looking at your beard. That's why I'm saying I don't know.
Well, mine's a little more chaotic than
his. Then this is what happens when I don't shave for a week, and it looks like I haven't shaved for a day.
A little follically challenged.
I'm
follically challenged on the top of my head.
I would have to grow the beard you have. I would have to not shave until December. And that's just to get to where you are right now.
This is my Checkers playoff beard.
All right. Well, it looks good. Keep it rolling. Hopefully you get to keep it up. A few other things that we're going to get into, and we said we would. Michael Smith is doing a great job on CarolinaHurricanes.com, breaking down the Hurricanes position by position, forward, defenseman, goaltenders. You went down and took a look at all of the players, what they did, their contributions were for the team this year in the National Hockey League, and kind of where their future stands with the club. We're doing the same thing here on Canes Cast, episode 39. Beard talk? I don't know.
Or good Charlotte.
Good Charlotte.
Checking in.
Joe, checking in. Nicely done.
Before we break down the defense, I do want to give a shout-out. Met a handful of fans down in Charlotte who either were, you know, based in Charlotte or had made the treks down from Raleigh or from wherever in the state that were kind enough to come up and say hello. Give a shout-out to this guy on Twitter, at Watson Bryant. He said the best part of the Checkers hockey game was shaking the webs. Michael Smith, huge fan of you and Mike Maniscalco's podcast. So shout out to at Watson Bryant on Twitter. Thanks for saying hello, and thanks for listening to the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely.
Also ran into someone, a kind lady, didn't get her name because I was rushing down for post-game stuff. She did ask me if you had made the trip with me, and I said no, and I think she was very disappointed.
I'm sorry, I had. I had an obligation Saturday.
Also met a guy
that I could not shake.
And also met a guy named Joel Ward. Not that Joel Ward.
Oh, I was different say, Joel Ward. He's still playing hockey, I think, on the West Coast
he's
right now.
He's busy. Yeah. And Bill Hughes I met as well. Or maybe I didn't meet him, but I saw him.
Okay. Well.
But anyway, thanks.
Goes on what fans, your definition of meeting people is.
Yeah,
so.
All the fans who came up and said hello. It was great to see you down in Charlotte, and hopefully we see you back there for round two.
And again, it's been a while since we've said this. If you're listening to the podcast, if you're new to the podcast, if you're listening to us, on Google Play or iTunes, please rate us.
Yes.
We appreciate it. 5 stars, that's phenomenal.
Best friends.
Thank you. Good friends. Michael Smith will actually stop and take time to talk to you when that happens.
We'll take a picture. Selfie.
Oh, there you go. And if I'm there, I will do the exact same. Four, we're still really good friends. We're going to hang out. We're going to have good times.
Yeah. No picture, though.
Five stars is the picture. And look, there's sometimes the podcast is a 4-star. We'll even admit
that. Yeah, it's fine. That's fair.
Get that. 3 stars, hey, you're listening. 2 stars, all right, what's going on here? And 1 star, you're just being mean.
Yeah, 1 star, we're ignoring you.
One star, I believe that if you do that, you're a troll. Like, that's what it comes down to. So
we're no longer friends.
There you go. So rate, leave some feedback. We like to read it. And, of course, any advice, any things that you want to let us know, tips, comments, questions, we always appreciate
it. And I do believe we had some, and by some, I mean, I think maybe there was one tweet about a live podcast. So that might be something we do this summer. We'll see.
It could happen. I am not saying no to anything.
We'll keep teasing it until it happens, but it might happen. Sometime in the future.
We got to figure out the logistics of where.
And when.
And, of course, and if it's a live podcast, we're still recording it. It'll just be in front of a live studio audience
now. Those people will hear the podcast live, and then all of our listeners will be able to enjoy it at a later date. But I think we might be able to make it happen, so stay tuned.
All right. Thanks. Good news. All right. Michael Smith. You're the Web's Michael Smith.
And URTV's Mike Maniscalco.
Well, thank you. You continue to break down the Carolina Hurricanes, and today we're going to do the exact same thing as we take a look at the defensive side of the Carolina Hurricanes. And that being said, if we're going to break this team down, this was coming into the season the strength of the Hurricanes. This was where everybody felt this team was going to take huge step forward. Not only that, they were going, by the way, I went French-Canadian there for a second, take huge step forward and like left an S off of the end of that. By the way, don't read into it if you're listening, Quebec. You're not getting a team. I'm going to go on a rant on that.
Well, they're probably
later.
Not listening because we're speaking English.
No, they listen.
Oh, okay.
Oh, they mentioned us. Stop it. You're not
just
getting a team.
Stop it.
You're not getting a team. Stop it. Move on to your next whoever you think. Avec moi. With me. That's what that means.
Yes.
Thank you. EC here.
Baguette.
Thank you. All right. That's enough of that. We'll get in trouble.
Yeah.
I don't care. The defense this year, I don't think, took a step forward. I think they kind of stayed in neutral. And at times, some guys picked up their game. But I don't think it was the whole step forward we were looking for. Now, look, there are injuries that come into play. And it shut down Brett Pesce and Justin Falk at the end of the year. Let's get to a positive. Noah Hanifin, first-time All-Star. Offensive game really opened up this year. But he goes into this offseason as a restricted free agent. But if we're going to say what is there on the blue line, let's go with the positive. What do you like about the blue line as a whole unit, as a unit of six, when they're working together? What are the things that you noticed this year that worked for Steve Smith's crew?
I think there's balance. There's balance across all three pairs. Even when you put Pesce and Slavin together, the team's top two defenders, even when you have those two together, I felt like there was decent balance across the pairs. I think, having Trevor Van Riemsdyk in that 5-6 pair helped contribute to that balance, because there's a guy who, you know, I don't want to call him a veteran, but he's had some years of experience in this league, and playing alongside even a guy like Noah Hanifin, who's been in the league for a couple of years, or Hayden Fleury, who was his rookie year, I felt like that brought some balance to the three pairs. And there were times all season, especially on the road, where the Hurricanes couldn't really concern themselves with matchups. They just had to throw a pair out and, throw them to the wolves, so to speak, sometimes, and trial by fire. And I thought, you know, at times the Hurricanes handled it better than others. There was some time where Slavin and Pesce were broken up in an attempt to even achieve more balance across the pairings. But yeah, I think you hit on it, is that I don't feel like the defense as a whole took a step forward. I don't think it took a step back either. I think it just remained sort of steady. I think in a way, some opponents might have figured out Pesce and Slavin's defense.
Well, you get a book on guys after a year.
Right, well, and they didn't fly under the radar as much. The league started to notice, okay, hey, this is probably the best pairing. Here's what we have to do to defeat him. I thought Justin Falk, his offensive game wasn't as strong as it was in previous years. All around, some good things. Like you said, Noah Hanifin, first-year All-Star, his offensive game really took a step. He was one, Brett Pesce and Jacob Slavin signed contract extensions last summer. Noah Hanifin did not, sort of betting on himself coming into the season. And I think he showed that, he belongs in this league and is a force in this league. Having, an All-Star to his name, he led the Hurricanes defense in scoring with 32 points, 10 goals, and 22 assists. He set himself up well heading into this summer for a new contract. Would like to see more. I think you can look at everyone and say there's areas of improvement
for
all of them across the board. The one thing that stood out to me this year was just the balance that they were able to achieve across all three pairs.
The one thing I liked was they were interchangeable in a good way, where if you had to move a guy up in a pair, as long as they could keep that left-right defensive pairing that every coaching staff in the National Hockey League loves to do.
Yeah.
You know, guys didn't seem out of place having to play next to somebody else. They really didn't. I think what I liked also about this group, I like Trevor Van Riemsdyk's game.
Yeah.
Comes in, he plays a simple game. I don't think that Trevor Van Riemsdyk is going to score 65 points from the blue line.
No.
But you can pair him up with anybody, and he's just solid. I was really, really impressed with his game most night in, night out. Now, he's not a bruiser. He's not going to, drop the gloves and do those things. But smart positionally, rarely did I see him make a mistake in his own end. And when I say rarely, I say that because I don't remember it. I'm sure it did. I'm sure somebody can point out to a game, oh, he did this, fine. But he was always smart with the puck, always knew where he wanted to go with it, which is key. I liked a lot of his game. I liked Noah Hanifin's offensive game development this year. And, you know, I think for Pesce and Slavin, there was a lot of they're comfortable playing together. When they got split up, there's that responsibility of I need to do – you kind of saw that with those two players. But they kind of figured it out again in the middle of the season when they got put back together and what they do. They figured out what they needed to do. That was, for me, the plus, the interchangeable parts, and you can put these guys in. The minus is – while Noah Hanifin's offensive game flourished, didn't see enough from the rest of the blue line. At moments, Jacob Slavin showed flashes that there's more offense to come from him. We hold Justin Falk to a higher offensive standard, and I think we have to because that's part of his game. But I also think that Justin Falk this year was kind of put in that situation of, well, I guess I need to be more defensive this year, be more of the guy in my own end, responsible player. But he's a guy, no, power play, get that cannon going and be the contributor there. So I didn't think there was enough offense from a group that I thought was ready to take a huge step forward and contribute offensively in the National Hockey League. I'm not saying they were going to be Nashville, but there should have been – there was more to give offensively out of that blue line. That was a bit of a disappointment. And then the breakdowns in their own end and sometimes that happens, and I'm not pinning it on one guy. That's a group. It's a collective group. I think Hayden Fleury at times showed that he was figuring it out, using his size, using his skating ability, and then there were times when he looked like a rookie in the National Hockey League. And guys in this league, if you get the wrong matchup, they're going to expose you. But he got a little bit more confident as the year moved on. Roland McEwen came up, same thing, more confidence as the year moved on in how he played. So the offensive lack of productivity, I think, was the dash for me this year, but the fact that there is some cohesion in that group, I'd like to see where it goes.
And I think the important part for Hayden Fleury and even Roland McEwen, who's going to compete for a spot come training camp, is this playoff run. For Hayden Fleury, having spent really the entire season up with the Hurricanes, he went down and played a game with the Checkers at the Hurricanes All-Star break. For him to go down and maybe have some success in the playoffs, I think is going to serve him well heading into next season.
You did a great job right there of setting it up for, hey, anything he does is great. Let me push some chips all in, if you don't mind. Mm-hmm. I think he should be the best defenseman on the ice night in, night out in the playoffs because of the experience he had in the NHL. I'll put that pressure on him because he showed he could play here. So then go down there and dominate and be the guy who – clears the front of the net, scores goals, has that flourish, plays with the confidence of, I'm an NHL player, let me show all you guys why. And that's what I want to see, especially if the Checkers keep playing and advancing throughout this postseason.
And I think in games one and two, at least for me, he was certainly noticeable. I think especially down there, he uses his size and skating. And that's the other thing, too, that separates him from a good collection of the defense down there is just how well he can skate. You notice that he's really a step above some of the other defensemen, and he uses his size more. And I think that's one thing, too, that I want to see more out of the group here in Raleigh is more snarl, more grit in front of the net. The one guy that showed that this year, I think, was Klaas Dahlbeck, who in 33 games, which I believe was a little less than he played last year, you know, a guy who was brought back for a year, didn't really expect much out of him, but he provided – that grit in front of the net. He was the guy to clear out in front of Scott Darling or Cam Ward. He was the guy to get in somebody's face, you know, who maybe got too close to the crease after the whistle. He was the guy who wasn't afraid to use his body in a positive way, and that's what I think this group could use more of heading into next season.
And it's not often that you laud bouquets of praise to a seventh defenseman or a 6-7 defenseman. But that's exactly what we're going to do right now, at least I am. Klaas Dahlbeck, every guy who's on an NHL roster wants to play. They don't want to be a healthy scratch. They don't want to be the guy who goes to the rink when it's an optional skate that has to go to the rink, and they get skated by Rod Brind'Amour, whichever assistant coach is there, just to keep their legs fresh or work out with Bill Burniston during the game while the game's going on. By the way, Bill Burniston, our good friend, TPANC.com.
Yep.
If you are thinking about the strength and conditioning coach of the Carolina Hurricanes the way that Michael Smith and I often do. But in Klaus Dahlbeck's situation this year, he was a professional. When they asked him to play, he did exactly what he was supposed to do, and he did bring that element, which I think the Canes need more of on the back end. So, looking to next year, that's the one thing I think that's missing. Yes, it's a different game, and it's fast, and puck movers, and you need all that, but you also need a guy who's just going to hit somebody on the other team.
Yeah, you got to have a guy who can separate the forwards from the puck by using his body.
Yeah.
And that's the I don't think the Hurricanes have enough of that. And the professionalism that you mentioned with Dahlbeck, that's something that I don't think that the typical fan sees because they don't see that in the morning skate. They don't see it in the locker room. But he, through and through, was a professional, never complained about being a healthy scratch for an extended period of time. And when he did get into the lineup, went in, did his what he was asked to do, and went about his business. And I think that's for a guy who is a 6'7" defenseman, or really, you know, sometimes even just a seventh, he was great. He was great for the Hurricanes to have in the locker room, just because of that professionalism and that the attitude that he brought to the rink each and every day.
And the players liked him. I mean, when he would do something in practice, or when he scored a goal this year, players got fired up over it. So he's a good player to have. And if he likes that role or accepts that role, I'm sure he wants to go somewhere and play.
Yeah.
Because looking at the free agents for the Carolina Hurricanes, Klaus Dahlbeck is a restricted free agent, so the Canes have to make an offer to him, you know, so he just doesn't walk for free. And I'm sure that they will. They'll tender something. If he is okay with that role, I am more than okay with him being here in that role. I think that it suits him fine, and he brings what we just said. We're not trying to stump for Klaus Dahlbeck to be the number one defenseman, but you need to have a guy who, if you have to play him for a couple of games, you know, an extended run, you can trust him. You know what he can do. This is what he brings. And he brings some things to the Canes that they need.
And I know he's not the head coach of the team anymore, but Bill Peters used to say, talk about guys accepting roles on the team. And that's when you find team success, is when guys find their roles, are comfortable in them, and thrive in them. And I think that's exactly what Dahlbeck did. He identified his role, he accepted it, and he did the most of what he could in that role.
The other thing, too, that Bill Peters used to say is, if you put a guy in who's been sitting, make it hard to come out of the lineup. And there were a couple of games where Klaus Dahlbeck made it hard to take him out of the lineup. So we'll see. I'm going to go crystal ball into the future. I've already said it. If there is one thing that I would add to the Canes' blue line that's missing, I would add maybe a veteran who brings that snarl, who plays the game with a hard edge on his shoulder. That doesn't mean he drops the gloves or he's a cement head or he's a cheap shot artist, but he's a guy who plays physical. He does what Michael Smith asked, the Webb's Michael Smith, separate the opponent from the puck, using physicality, stepping up, you know, delivering a check when you need to. That's something I'd like to see. And again, nothing wrong with bringing in a veteran guy who can maybe be a little bit more of a, okay, boys, this is what we're going to do tonight kind of player.
Someone who can just lean on the opponents. I think Justin Falk probably does that the most out of the other defensemen we listed. Hayden Fleury has the size to be able to do it. He just needs to, I think, apply that a little better. A guy like Trevor Carrick could potentially do it. So there's some bodies there that could maybe take another step in that direction. Or, as you said, you know, it wouldn't be a bad thing to add somebody heavy who could lean on the opponents.
All right. Anything else you want to focus in on the defense?
I think that's about it.
We broke down power play. We'll break down penalty kill really quick. Penalty kill, which has been so good under Steve Smith, and before that, John McClain, it was starting to build up as well. But it's been so good under assistant coach Steve Smith. Took a couple of steps back this year, and I think there are a few reasons why. One, the goaltending was not as solid as we expected it to be early on. And so you get a couple of games where you give up three or four power play goals or three power play goals and six chances. Now you're fighting the rest of the year to try to get up to a decent percentage of killing, and that's hard to do. You had some guys having to play in a new role on the penalty kill because, remember, for the majority of the season before, Ron Hainsey was a guy who was on the penalty killing unit. Noah Hanifin had to step up and play more penalty killing minutes. Trevor Van Riemsdyk had to play penalty killing minutes. These are guys who hadn't really done that in their career before. I think that Van Riemsdyk did step up, and by the end of the year was a really good penalty killer. And a couple of changes, too, with the forwards. You were counting on Marcus Kruger to be a defensive ace in that role, and We know how his story is he's in Charlotte right now with the Checkers and their organization, what they're doing. But it's I just think there were new pieces for the penalty killers. By the time they figured it out, they had given up a couple of gaudy games, and it didn't look that good that we're used to, the expectations we had. But they still had stretches where they went 12 games without giving up a power play goal, or 8 games, or, you know, 20 consecutive power plays without giving up a goal. So it was there. It got better. I just think there were a couple of things at the beginning of the year that drove down the numbers, and then when you do that, you're trying to fight all the way uphill to get your numbers where they should be.
Yeah, I think that perfectly encapsulates that. There were times where the Hurricanes in the kill struggled to get either the puck just out of the zone or the full length of the rink to get the line changes that they needed, and that certainly plays a factor into it. But yeah, I think it was good in spurts. You'd obviously like to see more consistency out of it, but really that's the story of the whole team is more consistency. Yeah. And as you mentioned, the goaltending plays a part in it too. So I see it improving again next year. I think it'll be better than it was this year.
All right. We want to take a quick look around the playoffs anywhere. Yes, no?
Sure. I've watched a little bit. Everything's played out as I've expected it to so far.
Oh.
Yeah. My bracket's perfect.
Whatever, Smithy Domus. Look at you.
My bracket's perfect for now.
I just want to focus on the West for half a second.
Oh, it's going to be excellent.
The series that I want to see, and if it is on, do not call me because I will be watching it. We got it. Winnipeg and Nashville in the second round is going to be spectacular.
And I don't know if I've said it on the podcast, but the winner of that series, I think, is going to win the cup. I guess the only factor playing against that might be that these two teams are just going to really wear one another down. And so you might have one sort of walking wounded heading into the conference finals against either Vegas or San Jose. So that could be the factor that plays into it. But those are the two best teams in the league. And I think that whoever wins that series is probably going to win the Stanley Cup.
That being said, tonight, as Michael Smith and I record CanesCast episode 39, checking in with Good Charlotte. We'll just keep extending it. Boston and Toronto play, and Washington and Columbus play. This is the first time in my life I think I've ever said this about Toronto and hockey. I want Toronto to win.
Oh.
And I want Columbus to win because I want two game sevens in the first round.
Here's the thing about Washington and Columbus.
Well, if you're Washington, do you just take a knee on the next two games? Because you know you're not beating Pittsburgh in the second round.
Well, maybe. But an interesting thing is playing out in that series. They lost the first two games at home, won game three in overtime, made a goaltending change. That sounds very familiar to a team that might have done the same thing in 2006.
Yes, but in 2006, that 2006 team was really damn good.
Yeah,
with great leadership.
Capitals team is.
They're very good.
Yeah,
they're very good.
I don't know if they're going to go on that type of run, but they're following the exact same script. And if that plays out, they'll win Game 6 tonight and move on to play Pittsburgh in the second round.
But they will have to get over the team they just can't beat.
Well, it's got to end sometime. Why not the year that Pace Sagister left the team?
Maybe. And that's Canes PR man extraordinaire. Stepped up his rookie year here with the Canes in that full capacity. He was an intern here and was amazing. Pace, kudos to you for this year. But I hate talking out of both sides of my mouth, because when people were sitting there about Connor Hellebuck, oh, he's never done it. Winnipeg hasn't won 31 years. I'm like, well, things have to end sometime, right? But then there are just some things in sports where, no, they don't. No, or not this edition.
Not for a long time.
This Pittsburgh team owns the Caps. Owns.
Well, and it's
owns.
Just, they're a different team almost when they get to the postseason. No matter what they did in the regular season, this team has been there. They know exactly what they've done and how to do it, and they do it. I don't know if they'll go all the way and win the cup again. I think the cup's headed to the West this year, but that's going to be a good series, and it's going to be a tall task to see if Washington can finally get over the hump. And that's again, assuming that Columbus doesn't win two straight here and move on. But I think Washington moves on from this series, and then we'll see if they can beat Pittsburgh. I don't think in my brackets I have them beating Pittsburgh, though.
Okay.
So, sorry, Washington.
Well, you shouldn't have them, because as long as Sidney Crosby is breathing, he will do all that he can to make sure Pittsburgh beats Washington. And by the way, that might be one of – there are not a lot of great rivalries in sports left. That might be a great rivalry still.
Yeah, that's a good one.
It really is. Enjoying that. All right. So, Michael, if you're ready.
If you like it, you can take it. If you don't, send it right back.
Thanks, Will Ferrell. He's so kind to do that for us week after week.
He likes you a lot.
He's going to come after us one day.
No, he's not. I interviewed him. I interviewed him once, and he is a spectacularly nice human
being. That's wonderful. Maybe we'll get him on the podcast.
I can ask.
Let's do it.
He's a big USC football fan.
He can do. He can intro this segment live for us.
He hasn't made a hockey movie yet. He did a basketball movie, semi-pro.
Yep.
We could get him to do a hockey movie, although SNL alums and hockey movies, not so good. Looking at you, Mike Myers.
Well, we'll see what he says.
Okay. Well, we're in.
Yeah.
We're here to help out. But I'm just going to throw this out there, and it involves the defenseman and Noah Hanifin. I'm going to put this out there. If you're the Carolina Hurricanes, I don't necessarily give him a 6 or 7 year deal, which is what everybody is looking for in today's day and age when you're talking about contracts. You know, you want term plus the money. But I do think that this could be a deal where he gets money, but maybe not term, like a bridge deal. We'll give you a 3-year deal at X, and it'll pay him somewhere between Brett Pesce and Justin Falk. You think that that's fair?
I'll at least take the short term.
Okay. So that's more of what I'm driving at, that it's more of a shorter deal than, you know, getting locked into place for 6 or 7 years.
Yeah, that Brett Pesce and Jacob Slavin both got that the longer term last summer. I think Hanifin might get the shorter term, but he's got, you know, this season playing into his favor, and the fact that he led the Hurricanes defenseman in scoring and was named an all-star. But I'm going to take the fact. I'm going to take the short-term contract, and we'll see if that happens or not.
All right. So, as always, I have one. Do you have one to send back over the fence here?
Sure. I'll think of it right now. I think we hinted at it earlier, but Klaas Dahlbeck, if you like it, take it. If not, send it right back. Does he come back with the Hurricanes? Because I think we have to keep in mind that he was re-signed so that the Hurricanes – or he was re-signed and the Hurricanes were then able to expose him in the expansion draft.
Yes.
Had there not been the expansion draft, I don't know if he would have been re-signed or not. But that certainly was one benefit of the Hurricanes re-signing him. So, does he come back in 18-19, knowing that there's not that expansion draft caveat to this summer?
If I take it, if this is me, I'll take it, but I can see it being sent back.
Yeah.
But I would take it, especially – we already covered it. If he accepts this role, this is what you are, the role that he played this prior season,
right?
He's not going to cost you $1 million. He's a good insurance policy to have on a blue line. He, again, popular with his teammates, knows – what's going to happen, I guess, when he's on the ice with this team. So I would take it, but the gut feeling would be it's probably going to be sent back because the Canes have a lot of positions open, and you went down to Charlotte and saw the players play. Some of these guys got to get called up right now.
Yeah, I think that's what's going to cloud the picture a bit is just the guys waiting in the wing, the guys like Roland McEwen, even a guy like Trevor Carrick, you know, who might be ready to step up. I think that clouds, you know, his future here a little bit. If the price is right, you know, I could see it maybe happening, but my gut tells me it might be sent back.
All right. So, a couple of questions that we have out here that have come in, Mr. Smith, if you're ready to take them.
Sure, let's do it.
This comes from Caniac47, Edith. Any hints on new assistant coaches? Is it possible Steve Smith will be retained? No hints on new assistant coaches right now because I think some of the first off, you got to get a head coach.
Right. And I think most of that decision making will be made by the head coach. He'll have really the say in who he wants to be his assistant coaches. The one, I guess, exception to that was when the Hurricanes brought on Bill Peters and Ron Francis said, we want Rod Brind'Amour sticking around as an assistant coach. And that was sort of a decision made ahead of time, but one Bill Peters was more than comfortable with. But, you know, more often than not, you're going to have a head coach who either has a couple guys in mind or would like a pretty big say in who he brings on his staff.
And as far as Steve Smith goes, I won't rule anything out. I know that the blue line likes playing for him. You take a look at the results. We already went down the penalty-killing road this year. In my knowledge, he's under contract, right? So he still is under contract. I don't think his contract expired.
I'm not sure about that.
But if he's under contract, I wouldn't be surprised to see him retained because of the relationship that he has with the defense and the blue liners. This one comes from SoCal Caniac. Hi, guys. Plans for the summer?
I think we answered this last week.
Hobbies, travels?
Frank, go listen to last week's episode.
I think I'm going to do some hunting in a Whitland.
Oh, are you?
No.
No, you're not.
Probably not.
You're going to come see Bon Jovi tomorrow night, though.
No, I'm not.
Oh, okay.
You are.
I will.
Yeah.
Sure.
It's your life.
Why not?
It's now or never.
Yeah. I ain't going to live forever.
That's true.
So.
That's, I might be wanted dead or alive.
And then maybe another trip to Charlotte. Hopefully more trips to Charlotte in store for us, Frank.
Well, if you want to go to Wilkes-Barre Scranton this weekend, I got the time.
I don't know.
We could check out Dunder Mifflin.
We could, yeah. That joke played out in Charlotte. It was well played.
Well, you know what they say. There ain't no party like a Scranton party.
There you go.
Because a Scranton party don't stop. All right, that'll do it for this edition of the Canes Cast. We'll be back at it again next Monday, right? You're here, I'm here, we're all here.
Last week, April, I guess it will be.
Yep.
April's almost April 30th.
It'll be the 40th episode of the Canes Cast.
That's something.
Well, we already have the name for that one.
Yep. You'll have to wait till next week to find out what it is.
So did we name this one Checking In with Good Charlotte?
At least Checking In.
I'm with you. I wasn't sold on Good Charlotte. Yeah. I just had it kind of.
I just, you know.
No, I don't blame you.
Never really caught on.
Well, he's the Web's Michael Smith.
And you are TV's Mike Maniscalco.
Which those, surprisingly, have been catching on.
They have been. When the people I saw, are you the Web's Michael Smith? That's what they would say. And I would say yes. But the lady who asked if Mike Maniscalco came with me did not call you TV's Mike Maniscalco.
But she was disappointed I wasn't
there.
She was
very disappointed that it was just me.
Well,
so.
No, she was not disappointed it was just you. She was more disappointed that this dynamic duo of the Canes Cast was not there together.
Yeah.
She was thrilled you were there. She was.
She just
wanted to see us together.
The pair. Yeah.
Exactly.
That's fine.
That's fine.
Yeah. We'll take it.
It's all good. And we won't send it back.
Exactly.
All right. So we'll check in with you guys next week. Who knows what we have in store? Canes have to have a head coach, have to have a general manager. We'll try to keep you on top of those changes as best we can here with the Canes Cast. And as a reminder, you got questions, send them to us. Use the old Twitter machine, hashtag Canes Cast.
Rate us, review us on iTunes.
Which, by the way, subscribe. Whatever rugby people are using Canes Cast, it's ours first.
Yeah, get off of it.
Exactly.
They're on Twitter, I think. Whatever, they're not listening. This isn't going to do much. But please,
I'm just
give us our hashtag back.
I'm just laughing at you going, get off of it.
Get off of it. It's ours first.
All right.
Trademark.
We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you.